Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Tzadi Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 20 lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Vav. If you prefer, you can estimate about halfway down the narrow lines of the Gemara, but by all means, spot the bow tie marking. Accompanying that is a Roman numeral number 1, right to the side of the Gemara text. And, being that we have a new marking, our attention is drawn to the margin, in which we have a nosei, a topic heading, slash mivne, combined with a structural note. The diamond highlights the word boi. You'll see that here. And if you follow the numbering scheme, the Roman numeral to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, you drop down to the bottom line, you'll see your number 2. And we've indicated on the side, boi Rami Bar Chamo. Rami Bar Chamo raises questions. She'eloisov, he has questions number 1, Roman numeral number 1, be'inyan she'elo be'bailim. Regarding the topic that we have been discussing till now, where you borrow something while the owner of that item is in your service. Number 2, Be'inyan Baal B'nichse Ishto. How does the halacha regard a husband with regard to his wife's properties, properties that the woman brings into a marriage? Shoyel Have Oy Soicher Have. Is he viewed as a borrower or is he viewed as a renter? As is always the case in our Gemara markings, introductory remarks, or topic headings, we present very general points. Don't be surprised if you see some additional factors in the Gemara text itself. A third issue that arises is Baal Benichse Ishto, a husband with regard to properties that his wife inherits, Mi Moal. Who is going to be guilty of Mi'ila in the event that she inherits sanctified items from her father's house? Another marking that you'll immediately notice is the house shape. The house shape you'll find is a series of questions all under Roman numeral number 1, where we were dealing with the issue of She'ela B'Bailim. So we note Sidra Shel She'elos B'Inyan She'ela B'Bailim, and here instead of simply presenting a superficial list, we're adding another level of detail. Notice the numbering scheme running down the side of the Gemara text, the houses that are numbered 1 through 8. Allow your eye to skim ahead. And if you look closely, you'll notice there's some, we'll call it a coloring scheme, meaning a darkening of the houses at different points. Each nuance is a result of some thought. It's not an accidental misdirection of the pen. So, noting the following. 1 and 2, house numbers 1 and 2, you'll also notice a dashed underlining. Those numbers 1 and 2, Hadogeshu al matras hahash matarat, the purpose of hahash ala, of the lending. So that if you look at question number 1, you'll see that Rami Barham asks, what is the din if you borrowed an animal, l'rov'ah. Rov'ah is for bestiality, major sinful act, but that's what he did, to have intimacy with an animal. So is that going to be considered she'ela, a standard issue of loaning, and the nafkamina is, will he be chayev in onsin if he borrows an animal for that purpose? Is he called a shoel? And the shoel, as we know, is someone that is obligated to compensate in the event of oines. The second question involves borrowing the lotion of the Gemara's leira ois ba. What kind of appearance you borrow the animal in order to appear as a man of means, a man who rides a tall, let's say, atop a gracious-looking, impressive horse. So, in the time of the Gemara, certainly, that would impart a sense of importance to that individual. So he borrowed it in order to make a good impression. And Rashi adds a little more information. He says, as a result of that, he'll have commercial benefit. People will extend goods to him on credit, and he can profit without having the pressure of paying immediately for those items. Questions 3 and 4, you'll see there the emphasis is on Hadogesh hu al shovi hashala, the value of the borrowing. How much is the value in what you are going to be using the borrowed item? Questions 5 through 8, and I should point out, when you see questions 3 and 4, the house marking is highlighted in such a way that you would isolate them as questions regarding value of the borrowing. Questions 5 through 8, where the tips are colored in, Hadagesh hu beinyan bailus. The emphasis has to do with ownership. Velo al matras ha'ashala, and not there are not questions regarding what's the purpose of the borrowing. And we have another he'ora, a little we want to point out an additional nuance. Shelos 7 and 8, einomi shelos shel Romi Marchamo. When you get to 7, you'll see that Ravina raises the question to Ravashi, and in 8, Rav Elish raises presents a question to Rava. Now the Gemara. Once again, 20 lines from the top. Boy Romi Bar Chamo. Shwalo L'Rova Mahu. A man borrowed someone's animal for bestiality. Does this make the borrower a shoel, a halachically categorized borrower, which would obligate him even for oinsim if something were to befall the animal, even something beyond the borrower's control, like the animal dying, would he have to compensate? So there are two sides of the question. Aleph, O Dilma, the next line, you can see at the end of the line, squiggle line, O Dilma, Beis. Do we say, Kedishaili Inshi Bo'inon, in order to become a shoel, a borrower, you have to borrow it for normal things that people borrow animals for. People don't borrow animals for this disgraceful act. Or do we say that a shoel becomes obligated because he receives benefit? In fact, as we've seen in a previous sugya, it's kind of one-sided. He gets benefit, and he doesn't really have to do anything for the item he's borrowing. Here too, he is enjoying, he is benefiting. Next question. Shwala le'ra'ois ba mahu. As we explained in our introductory remarks, he borrowed an animal for the purpose of creating an image, an appearance. As Rashi says, he should appear as a man of means so that businessmen will give him products, items for sale, and extend it to him on credit. A man of means is someone that will attract people who want to do business with him. Mahu. So does this make the individual a shoel, a borrower. And as we said before, to become chayev in onsim if something should befall the animal, even that which is beyond the borrower's control. Mamona bo'ina vo'ika. Do we require something of value to be borrowed? And, well, you have an animal that is being borrowed. Odilma mamona de'isle hano mine bo'ina v'leka. Or, in order to become a borrower, it would require that you are benefiting from the item itself. Here, you're not using the animal itself. The animal's presence by you is creating an impression, but it's not as if you are using the body of the animal for work purposes, like plowing or as a beast of burden. So the question remains then, is this considered an act of borrowing that would classify the borrower as a shoel? And now, questions 3 and 4. These have to do with values. Shoala la sois bo pochus mi pruta mahu. Let us say you borrow the animal for doing a minimum amount of work with it. So little is the value in what you want to use it for, is that it comes out to less than the minimum type of currency. It's less than a pruta, mahu. Does this make the individual a borrower, a shoel? Of course, I'm sure everyone got the gist of it. There's a halachic category known as shoel, and there's the act of borrowing. So, of course, in all of these, he is doing the act of borrowing, but does that make him into a shoel with its halachic ramifications? Mamona bo'inon v'ika. In order to become a shoel, is it enough that you are borrowing something of value? Odilma, kol pochos mipruto lo klum hi. Or any benefit that you have that's less than a pruta, it's considered nothing. Shoal shtei poros la'asos b'hen pruta mahu. Rashi presents this as a build-up of question 3, namely, if you take the position that borrowing for less than a pruta is nothing, what about, in this case, you're borrowing two animals, together they will produce for you one pruta worth of benefit. Mi amrinon zil boser shoyel mashiel v'iko. Do we say you focus on the people involved, the owner and the borrower, and between those two, so you have a person, and I emphasize a person, borrowing and getting a pruta worth of benefit from his act of borrowing from the mashiel. The mashiel is the owner of the animals. So when you focus on the people, you see a pruta worth of value, odilma, or possibly zil boser poros. You focus in on the animals, the cows that you are borrowing, v'chol chada v'chada leko mamona, and each cow on its own is producing less than a pruta worth of value for you. And as we said, if question 4 is a build-up on question 3, and in question 3 we're going to make the assumption that pochus mishova pruta is nothing, so to this Bayes possibility with regard to the two animals would also result in being nothing. He's not a borrower. Number 5, and here, as we indicated before, questions 5 through 8 have to do with issues of ownership. Shoal mishutfin, a cow that belonged to partners. Venishal loy echod mehen. Now, here we have a question that touches on the issue of a nafkamina. Practical application of this question has to do with the exemption of bebailim. The situation then once again is someone borrowed an animal belonging to partners, and the Gemara says v'nishal loy echod mehen. One of the partners went along with the animal in service of the borrower. Mahu. Is there any exemption in the event that the animal that was jointly owned by two people dies. Kulo bailov bo'inon v'haleka. In order for there to be an exemption of bebailim, do you need to have the entire ownership in service of the borrower? And that is not the case here. Only one of the partners offered services to the borrower. Oidilma, or possibly, me'ahu palga didei miha miftar. Let's just assume the animal was worth $100, and two partners, each one having an equal amount, $50 apiece, and the animal dropped dead while borrowed, at the same time that one of the partners was in service of the borrower, maybe there's a mere $50 debt that arises now as a result of the death of the animal. The other $50, there is exemption because one of the two owners was in service of the borrower. Now, under, we'll say, question number five, we have another scenario very similar, but you'll see how the details are switched around. Shutfin Shishwalu. Here you have partners that borrowed an animal to plow a piece of ground that they owned jointly. So you have partners in property that are borrowing an animal. V'nishal le'echod mehen mahu. And the owner of the animal went along to serve one of the partners who borrowed the animal in malacha, as Rashi says, malacha that's not related to the shutfis, to their being joint owners. So you have the one cow owned by one man that was being borrowed by two people to plow jointly owned ground, and the owner, that single owner, went to offer services to one of the partners in non-partnership matters. What do we say? Kulo sho'el bo'inon v'leka. In order for there to be a p'tur of b'bailim, you would need the owner to be in service of the entire force that's borrowing, and that's not the case here. Odilma bahi palga d'shayli mihas miftar. In the event, as we have been assuming you understand, in the event that the animal dies, since the owner is working for one of the borrowers, that debt he would have had to pay if the owner wasn't there, so that one of the two borrowing individuals will be exempt from his debt, his burden of the debt. Another question. Shoal meho isha v'nishal bailo imo. This is, say, part one of question six. Someone borrowed a cow belonging to a woman. What do we mean, belonging to a woman? She brought this into her marriage with her husband, and it's called nichsei malug. Nichsei malug are properties that a woman brings into a marriage, where the principal remains the woman's, and benefits, the peros, belong to the husband. So there was such a cow that was owned by a woman that she had brought into her marriage, and the husband of this woman went in service of the guy borrowing her animal. So the husband, who he has a connection to that animal in the sense that he's entitled to benefit from the fruits, the production of that animal, the husband went along with the animal. And we want to know, is that going to be considered a case of bebailim, where the borrower, if the animal dies, would be exempt? Isha Sheshoala, and here you have not the woman owner of animal, but here the woman is borrowing an animal to plow a piece of property, a piece of ground, some agricultural holding that she has as Nichse Malug. Once again, properties that the husband is allowed to benefit from the fruit that grows there, she is the owner of the principal, the essence of the land. The principle of the land. Now, the woman in this case borrowed an animal, and the owner of that animal went in service, offered services to the woman's husband, Mahu. So the issue once again is an issue of, do we have, in the event that this animal that the woman is borrowing dies, is there any obligation to compensate for its death? Or do we say that by the fact that the owner of the animal went in service of the lady, the borrowing lady's husband, is considered a ptur of the bailim? Is the husband considered in this context as being also a type of borrower, since the woman borrowed and the husband is able to benefit from the fruits of that land for which she's borrowing the animal, and then the owner of the animal works for the husband? How do we analyze this? So in both of these questions, of six, question six, part one and part two, it's important for us to define the legal identity of the husband. So the Gemara explains, kinyan peros ki kinyan guf domi olo. The husband's right to the peros, to the benefits of her nichse maluk, of the property she brought into the marriage, does that make the husband as if he owns the essence of the property, the guf, the principal value of the property, or not? If you say that the kinyan peros, that the husband has the husband's rights to the fruit production, makes it such that he is like, it's as if he has a kinyan aguf, he would be considered an owner. And then you would apply that analysis to Roman numerals 1 and 2 of question 6. We continue. Another question. Omale Ravina Loravashi. Ha'omer l'shulcho. A man says to his agent, say, Vashel li im porosi mahu. Someone is loaning out his animals. We have a cow owner. He instructs his agent, his shaliach, and says, go and on my behalf offer services to the one borrowing my cow. And then the cow dies. Is there going to be an exemption on the part of the borrower? By love, mamish boinovaleko. In order for there to be a ptur, an exemption of the bailim, you need the actual owner, the title holder of the animal. And in this case, that's not the agent. So you don't have the actual owner in service, and therefore there would be no ptur of bailim. Oidilma shlucha shalom kamo savika. Or should we apply the well-known concept that the agent of an individual is like that individual himself, so that the shaliach, of the owner of the animal, is like the owner is going along with the animal that's being borrowed, and therefore there would be exemption of the bailim in the event that the animal dies. Amarle Rav Acha brei de Rav Avi la Rav Ashi. Now Rav Acha relates to the questions we saw above. We have questions, I should sum up two of the questions, questions 6 and 7. So Rav Acha says, Baal, the identity, the legal identity of the Baal, of the husband, as being, with regard to his kinyan peros, is it like kinyan aguf or not? Plukta de Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish. That is a controversial point, concerning which Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish argued. Shaliach, the issue of classifying an agent, Pluto de Rabbi Yonasan v'Rabbi Yoshia. It is a disagreement between those two figures, Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia, and the Gemara elaborates, and we go over the points. Number 6, Baal, Pluto de Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish. Ditmar hamoicher sodehu lechavero leperos. What we're going to be doing in the next couple lines is looking at how to view kinyan peros. And we know in the husband-wife relationship concerning the nichsei malug, the husband has a kinyan peros. Here we're going to another example, not related to husband-wife, but yes, related to the issue of kinyan peros. So here you have someone that sold a field, hamocher sode lechaver leperos. He's selling the fruit rights of his field to a purchaser. Rashi across from here says, hamocher sode leperos, sheyochal lokeach perosel shnayim shlosh shanim. The arrangement here is that the purchaser will benefit, will become the owner of the fruits 2 or 3 years. V'achar zman tachzor lebailam. And after that, it will go back to the owner. Maybe bikurim v'kore. And this we'll see in the Gemara, but it's presented quite briefly. This has to do with the mitzvah bikurim, what's known as the first fruits. And though that bikurim tithe is then brought to the Beis HaMikdash and given to a kohen, and the owner of those fruits recites a passage from the Torah. And Rashi goes on to say, Arami Oveid Ovi. The Chol HaParsha, he says over the section of the Psukim found in Dvorim Perek Chof Vov. The Kore Anibo, and in reading that section of the Torah, when bringing the Bikurim, you're going to be saying, Hine Hevesi Es Reishis Priho Adoma Azher Nasad Ali. I'm bringing the first fruits of the ground that you gave to me. So now, who's saying this? The person that bought the mere fruit rights. And yet, he is able to say, these are the fruits from the ground that you gave me. Where did he get the ground? All he bought was the right to fruits. So how is he able to say that? The kinyan peros, ki kinyan aguf. The right to the fruits is tantamount to ownership of the land itself. So now, we read that Rashi for introductory purposes, so we go back to the Gemara. Regarding the husband who has that kind of kinyan, a kinyan peros in his wife's nichsei malug, and the Gemara says, Hamocher soda lechaver leperos, Rabbi Yochanan mer mevi v'korei. The purchaser of the fruit rights brings the bikurim and reads the parsha. Even though part of his reading is, Wa'adoma shenasatali, these are the fruits from the land that you gave me. Well, in this case, he didn't buy land. He bought only the right to fruits. But, as we'll see shortly, Rabbi Yochanan holds it, Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguv Dami. And Reish Lakish Omar, Mevi V'eino Korei. He brings the fruits, but he doesn't say that passage. Rabbi Yochanan, we go over the Shitas now. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Mevi V'korei. He brings the fruits, and he says that Parsha. Why? How is he able to say, Minu Adoma Shir Nasatali? Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Domi. The acquisition that he made for the fruits grants him the equivalent of Kinyan Aguf, ownership of the land itself. For Eish Lo Gishomer, maybe Veino Kore, he brings Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, but he doesn't recite the passage. How in the world could he say, Minu Adoma Shir Nasatali? So he says, he bring the parsha, but you don't read something that's going to then be a lie. Kinyan peros, lav, ki kinyan aguf, domi. The kinyan that he has on the fruits is not tantamount to ownership of the principle of the land. So that was the analysis of question number 6. Namely, the question number 6 is dependent on the machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Question number 7, Shliach, the issue of a Shliach, Pluto de Rabbi Yonason Rabbi Yoshia. You'll see they disagree, and just to reiterate the case in question 7, is someone that said to his agent, go and offer services to the borrower instead of me. Is that as if the owner is there? Do we say shlucho shalom kamoso or not? So, as we said, this is going to turn out to be a machlokes reviyonis and reviyoshia desanya. Ha'imer labatrobas, one turns to an executor that he has working in his house. And he says, kol nidorim shetehe ishti nidoris. Mikan v'ad ad she'ovo v'okam ploni. Ha'ferla. All the vows that my wife makes from now until I come back from such and such a place, I want you, Mr. Apotropos, to void them, hofer law, to invalidate them. Vehefir law, and the Apotropos does such. Yochoyu Muforin? Are they undone? Tamulomar Yishaya Kimenu Vishaya Ferenu. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia says no, it's the husband that has to either establish the vow, that is, corroborate the vow, or Yifirenu, or undo the vow, not the agent. Rabbi Yonis and Omer, Motsinu b'chol makoim sheshlucho shalom k'mos. We find in all areas of halacha that the agent of an individual is like the individual himself. So that as far as the owner of an animal telling his agent to go in service of the borrower, according to Rabbi Yonasan, then you'd have a tour of the Bailam because of Kol Mokom Shulcho Shalom Kamoso. According to Rabbi Yoshia, no. You don't say, you wouldn't apply Shulcho Shalom Kamoso. Amalei Rav Ilish Larova Ha'oimer La'avdoi Tsei Vashel in Porosi Mahu. Person requests of his slave, go and be borrowed along with my cow. The Eved now is being told by the owner that's lending out his cow, you go and have your services lent to the owner, to the borrower as well. Is that called bebailim? Tiboy lemandomar shulcho shalom kamoso. Tiboy lemandomar shulcho shalom eino kamoso. This question can be asked according to both opinions. One that says the agent is like the man himself, and the other that says not so. Tiboy lemandomar shulcho shalom kamoso. This question can be raised according to that particular opinion. Hani Mili, and still we would say that when do we say that a person's agent is like himself? Shliach Debar Mitzvahu. A shliach that himself is someone that is obligated to do mitzvahs. Avol Eved Delav Bar Mitzvahu. Delav Bar Mitzvahu. But a slave, he has certain mitzvah obligations, but not like a regular adult male. And as such, the Eved is called a non-bar mitzvah. He's not someone bound by mitzvahs. And therefore, we can't say regarding someone like that, shlucho shel adam kamoso. So even if you hold in general shlucho shalom kamoso, it could be that by the Eved we would not apply that concept. Or even according to the opinion, it says that a person's agent is not like the sender himself. Hanimili shliach. That's when you're dealing with an agent, a stranger that you appoint as an agent. Avol Eved, Yad Eved, Kiyad Rabo Damya. But an Eved, a slave, he's like an extension of the master. He's like the arm of the master. And it's quite obvious that certainly if a man owned an animal and loaned it out, and the owner went along with it, the borrower would be able to benefit from the patur of the bailim. Since the Yad Eved is Kiyad Rabo, it's like the Rabo himself, like the owner went along with the animal. And there would be then exemption for the borrower if the animal dies. Omar Le, now this question had been posed to Rava, so Rava responds, Mistabra Yad Eved Kiad Rabo Damya. It's most likely that we would say that Yad, the arm of the Eved, is like the arm of the master. And if the master who was loaning out his cow said to his slave, go and offer services to the borrower, you would have a patur of bebailim. Boy Romi Bar Chamo, Baal Benichse Ishto. And here we have a new marking. This is the volcano shape on the side of the Gemara under Ornose Mivne heading. The volcano highlights Meshutaf L'shtei Sheilot Habot. The common point to the two questions that will be raised now by Romi Barchamo, who hanosei shel hageder shel baal benichs ishto, has to do with categorizing, in legal terms, the husband's affiliation with his wife's properties. When we speak of categorizing the husband, I must mention the issue is he viewed as a borrower, as a shoel, or a socher, or a renter? Now the Gemara. Boy Romi Barchamo. Baal benichsei ishto, a husband with regard to his wife's properties. And we mentioned the nichsei malug, properties that she brings into the marriage, that he, the husband, is entitled to benefit from the fruits. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Shoyel have, oy soicher have. Do note the new marking, the diamond, and on the side, in the margin, we have under our Mivne heading, Shlavim. These are stages. Kedei lohovin ma hoyo shelas Romi Barchamo. We presented the question in a fairly literal fashion, but you'll see that it takes a good few lines of Gemara before we can understand what he was even asking. So, is he considered a shoyel? And the thinking right now would be that if something should happen to, let us say, behemos of nichsei malug that she brought into the marriage, animals that she brought into the marriage, he is allowed to work with them. Imagine an onus would befall one of the animals. It would, let us say, die, and he would have to compensate. Or maybe he's a socher, a renter, which is exempt from onus. Omar Rava. Rava, in commenting on Romi Barchama's question, says, Lefum churfa shabeshta. Through his sharpness, Romi Barchama was a sharp individual, but sharpness sometimes leads to hastiness, and as a result of that, he made a mistake. In other words, in presenting the question this way, monafshach, either way you look at it, e shoyel have, even if you say he is a borrower, nevertheless, she'elo b'baylim he, the true owner is the wife. Well, she's with him, she's serving him as a wife would do service for one's husband. So, she entered the, we'll call the service period, before he started working with the animal. As soon as she married him, that starts the, we'll call the bebailim element. So the husband would be exempt if anything should happen to the animal. And if you view him as a renter, schirus bebailim he would be considered a renter of an item, of an animal in this case, where the owner, again, the wife, is coming along with it, where she starts her service for her husband, who is the renter, so to speak, before he started using the animal. So there is no side in analysis that would lead to the husband's obligation to compensate. That, of course, is if you're going to leave the question as that. However, Ela ki kome vayaleva Romi Barchamo, the question that Romi Barchamo is meant to ask, the agar mina para v'hoder nasva, he rented from a woman her cow, and then he married that woman. My, how do we look at the husband? Shoyel have o socher have. Now, of course, by the animal being in the man's service, his having rented it beforehand, so there's the fact that the owner enters the picture in his service later does not create exemption. And that's of course a point that we've seen in the past. It's only if the owner is in service of the borrower / renter prior to the use of the animal, or simultaneous with the use of the animal, but not after the use of the animal sets in. So, given the circumstances, we ask, Shoyel have, Hosocher have. Shoyel have, is he viewed as a borrower? V'asyo she'elo bebailim, mafke'o schirus shelo bebailim. And if you say that he is a shoel, that a husband is considered a shoel, the she'ela status that he has as a man married to that woman, that status as a borrower with the woman, his wife, being together with him at that point, would undo the previous arrangement of his having rented the animal without the owner in the picture. He simply had previously rented that animal from her, and then during the rental period, he ended up marrying the woman. What status does the husband have? Does the rental, if he's categorized as a she'el, do we say that the she'ela bebailim status that he has would come and undo the schirus she'lo bebailim, and he would then benefit from the exemption of being she'el bebailim, she'ela bebailim? Oidilma, or possibly, socher have. A husband, with regard to his wife's properties, is viewed as a renter. Well, he was a renter before, and he's a renter now. Uschirus kidekaimo kaimo. And the schirus status would simply continue. And as such, he would have the status of a socher. And the exemption that Bebailim would offer would not be applicable. The Gemara, though, asks, is that really your analysis? Umay shno di'i shoyel have, why are you suggesting there should be a difference, that if you view him as a borrower, the osi she'el Bebailim afka schir shelo Bebailim, that the shoel Bebailim status would undo the schir shelo Bebailim and give him all the benefits of the exemptions of Bebailim. Even if you view the husband as a socher, a renter, with regard to his wife's properties, let his new renter status with wife in the picture come and undo the schir shelo bebailim, and let him gain all the benefits of a socher bebailim. If you are willing to say shoel bebailim undoes the previous status, let the schirus bebailim also undo the previous status. Ela, so then what's the question? Ela ki kol mibayo l'rami bar chamo kegoin di agro ihi poro me'almo v'hodar nasva. We're dealing with a woman that rented a cow from some outsider, and then this woman, who was in the midst of enjoying a cow rental, she went and married a man. And the man will be using the cow that she rented. We have a note to look at Rashi, Aliba Valiba de Rabbanan. Rashi, just a few lines up from here, says that according to the Rabbanan, we will see in our bracketed section of Gemara, you can see we have three lines in brackets. According to the Rabbanan, the Dina, the Shoyel, the Hadi, the Mashil, who, the Lo Eitzel Bailam, Rishonim Loti Bailach. There's a Machlokes Tanoyim between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. In the event that someone, an owner of an animal, rents to a renter, and then a borrower borrows from the renter, and then the animal, let us say, dies while in the possession of the borrower. According to the Rabbanon, the shoel, he deals with the mashiel, the one who loaned it to him. He does not deal with the original owner. So Rashi says that according to the Rabbanan, that the shoel, the borrower, deals with the one who loaned it to him, and not with the original Bailam Rishonim, lo tiboil. If there's no question over here, the afilu hu shoel, even if you view the husband as a borrower, kevon de ledida boy shlumi, since he would have to pay to her, she is the renter of the animal, potter, he, the husband, would be exempt. D'she'elo bebailim he. That's a fairly straightforward case of his having borrowed the animal from the woman that he had married, and as such, she is in his service, and there's the exemption of she'elo bebailim. Rashi goes on, ki tiboy aloch l'Rebbe Yossi. The question that we're investigating right now at stage 3 would be a question within the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Domar that said in the scenario that we introduced, an owner rented to Mr. 1, and Mr. 1, in this case Mrs. 1, then loaned it to her husband. And Rabbi Yossi says, Tashlumin, that when it comes to a matter of compensating for the animal that died, labailim, it goes to the original owner. Vahashta lo bebailim he. And in our case, the original owner is not working in service of the husband. My, we want to know, shoyo have mimeno, do we view the husband as a shoel from her? For shoyel chayavoinsin, and a shoyel, a borrower, is obligated to compensate for ones, umishaling levayim, and therefore the husband would pay the original owner. Osocher have, or do we view a husband with regard to his what his wife has? In this case, she had rented an animal. Do we view the husband as a socher, and upoter meonsin, and as such, he would be exempt in the case that the animal dropped dead. You'll ask, why, based on what would you view the husband as a socher? Where's the rental fee that he pays? Umay schiruse, what's the schirus, the payment that a renter makes? Where does that appear in the case of the husband? Sharei tiknu lo chachomen pirkoino tachas peros im nishbeis. A husband must redeem his captive wife in exchange for the rights that he has to the fruits of the properties that she brings into the marriage. So there's that, we'll say, payment element that exists in theory, a husband to the wife, namely his redeeming her from captivity. Now, we read the Rashi so as to gain a background for understanding the Gemara. So now, once the question is raised concerning a woman who rented an animal, and while she was renting it, she happened to marry a man, and that man, the husband, uses that animal that she rented. We mentioned that we have brackets. You can go to you see in your Gemara text brackets. The reason for the brackets is that the main question is according to that which appears after the brackets, according to Rabbi Yossi. So in the meantime, being that we read the Rashi and we have a good sense of these two opinions, let's go back to our Gemara text straight through in the brackets. V'alibo de Rabbonon di Amri Shoyel Mishalim Masocher. And according to the Rabbonon that said in that chain situation of owner renting to renter then loaning to borrower, the Rabbonon hold that in the event that something happens to the animal while in the possession of the borrower, he pays the renter. Lo tiboy aloch, there is no question, devade sheva by the me. He borrowed from his wife, and the borrower's obligations are to the renter. It would be a clear case of exemption because of his having borrowed it while his wife is serving him. Ki tiboy aloch alibo de Rabbi Yossi. Diomar tachsir poro lebailam horishonim. The question is, how do we look at the husband in light of Rabbi Yossi Shita, his opinion that the borrower has to deal with the original owner? So borrower, in the event the animal dies in general, pays original owner, not the renter. So that you don't have if you don't have any issue of bebailim. There's no bebailim exemption here. The question is, how do we look at the husband? My, Shoyel Haveh? Is he a simple borrower and would have to compensate in the case of onus where the animal dies? El Socher Haveh, or is he viewed as a renter and he would be exempt from onsim? Just to repeat the main point here, since the husband deals with the real owner and not the wife, the fact that the wife is in service of her husband has no bearing on this particular case. All we're left with is, how do we view the husband in that which he receives from his wife? Is he a borrower, and he would have to then pay the original owner because he has the status of shoel, or is he considered like a renter? The Gemara answers. Notice we have a long answer. Omar Rava, Baal, lo shoel havei velo socher havei, elo lo keach havei, either Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina. Surprise answer. We were focusing your attention on two possibilities, and Rava says he's neither one of them. He is a third category. The husband is considered like a purchaser with regard to his wife's properties. And as such, as Rashi adds, he is exempt. He doesn't have to compensate for the death of the animal that his wife had rented. And this category of purchaser is based on Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina's teaching. The Yom Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Ba'usha, by the way, don't confuse the names here. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina is an Amora, as opposed to the question, as we suggested, was an analysis according to the Tana Rabbi Yossi. So the Amora, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says, Ba'usha, it's the name of a place where the Sanhedrin had some... had stayed there for a period of time. In Usha Hiskinu, they made an enactment. Ha'isha Shemochro Benifsei Malug B'chaye Baila Umeso, a woman who sold properties that she brought into the marriage that we classify as Nifsei Malug while her husband was alive, and she pre-deceased her husband. Aba Motsi Miara Lekuchos, the husband has a right to extract the properties from those purchasers. Why? Because the Baal is considered lokeach rishon. He's considered having first rights to it. So even if she sold it, if he outlives her, he takes away from those purchasers. She Rashi adds, Haba motzi mi'al lekuchos alma ein lo reshus limkor, dehu havei lokeach rishon. She really had no right to sell. He is considered the first purchaser. We continue in the Gemara with a third question that Romi Bar Chama presents. The bow tie marking we featured earlier, these were simply, three questions that Romi Bar Chama presents in our sugya. So, Baal Benifse Ishto, Mi Moal. We pointed out earlier this volcano shape was simply to highlight that this question and the previous question dealt with this issue of how do we view a husband with regard to his wife's properties. The question itself is, in my opinion, presented in a very terse fashion. So in order to appreciate this, let us look at the Tosfos. Baal benifse ishto mimoal. And actually, even before we look at that, we should look at the Rashi. Mimoal. The Rashi we're looking at just a couple lines up from here. Kagon shenaflu lo nechosa me'aviyah mishenises. We're dealing with a married woman. After she was already married, her husband, her father died. She inherited his properties. V'moya mois shel hekdish, and amongst his holdings were monies that he had sanctified. I'm sure everyone knows that it is prohibited for an individual to derive personal benefit from items sanctified. The sin for deriving benefit is called me'ila. V'ein yiduin shehein shel hekdish. Now, this money came to her in the inheritance, And it wasn't known, it wasn't clear that they were holy funds. Vi omer rabbanon, and the rabbis say, Baal zeche bohen b'chol ha-nechosim l'shtamish l'choperos, a husband has a right to all of the properties that she inherits while she's married to him, and to benefit from their fruits. U'betakonazu nase shaliach is another girsa, shalit, or even shalish, benichse hegdish liknoisam. And as such, he gains a certain sense of control over these holy properties. And the initial thinking is that this represents the property's departure from holiness, from the realm of holiness to the realm of commonness, commonality. And that would be me'ila. And again, all of this, the thinking is, even while the monies are still tied up and lying by the side, in other words, even without actual spending of them, this is considered their departure from Hulin, the fact that it leaves the original owner's realm. He died, it's inherited by his wife, and the husband has control over it. Mi mo'al b'hoitzazu. Does this departure from holiness constitute mi'ila? There's as we said before, the Tosfos adds a little more to this. Let's look at it together, just a couple lines down from here across in the Tosfos commentary. Baal b'nichse ishto mi mo'al. Mi amrinon baal mo'al shu oisa ikur ha'maisa shenosa. Do we say that the husband is guilty of mi'ila in so far as he did the ikur action by marrying her, v'al yedei ze zechibimus, and through his having married her, he then benefits or gains rights to the money. Oydilmo he asta ikur amaisa she niseislo, or maybe we say she, the woman, did the main action by agreeing to marry him, to be married to him. Oydilmo Beisdin also ikur hamaisa she tiknu she is kibemos, or maybe the Beisdin carries the guilt because they made the enactment that a husband is entitled to her monies. Now, all of that serves as an introduction to what we'll see in the Gemara, and we'll see very shortly. The Gemara presents all of this in a systematic fashion. We have a double underline, one of our series markings, and we indicate on the side, under the Mivne heading, these double underlines are shlavim, or stages, show Hatkofas Rova ala Hava Mina b'she'elas Rami Bar Chama. Rova will attack the assumptions or the suggestions in what Rami Bar Chama was asking. We went through the Tosfos to see what different possibilities there might be, and now when we look in the Gemara, we'll see how Rava rejects them. So now the Gemara. Omar Rava. Note that we have a long dechia. Dechia, the Dalit is a dechia, is a rejection. Omar Rava, man limol. You, Rami Bar Chama, are asking, is a husband considered moel with regard to his wife's properties, as we saw in the Rashi, those properties that she inherited while married to her husband. So Rava says, who should be moyo man limo baal? Are you suggesting that the husband is a candidate for the sin of mi'ila? Why in the world should he be a candidate for that? De hetero nichole delikni, isura lo nichole delikni. That when we speak about the husband gaining rights to his wife's properties, properties that he has that are kosher, that are heter, that are permitted, prohibited items, is not something he does and wants to acquire. How can you say that he should acquire something he doesn't want to acquire? So that the idea of the monies leaving the realm of Hekdesh by entering the husband's possession doesn't get off the ground. He doesn't want to acquire them. Timol E, are you suggesting maybe she, the woman, should be guilty of mi'ilah? Nami lo nicho lo delikni. She too doesn't want to acquire these monies. Nimo Basedin, should the court be guilty of Mila? Ki avdu rabbonon takanto v'yamru ba'al kechave letera. When the rabbis made an enactment that a husband is considered like a purchaser of his wife's properties, that's when you're dealing with things that are heter, that are allowed. The rabbis didn't make an enactment that he should be said to acquire that which is prohibited. Ela Omar Rava. Rava deals with this issue in his way. Baal Moal Lichshiyotzi. The husband will be guilty of Mi'ila when he spends those monies. Not by his actual inheriting of the monies, but when he spends them. Similar to any case of the expenditure of holy monies used for the mundane. You'll notice that we have a very long bracketed section. On the side of the Gemara, we have a starred note. After the brackets, the Gemara will return to the topic that we've been discussing extensively for the last couple of dapim, the exemption when owner is in service of the borrower, the renter. Within the brackets, the Gemara will deal with the we'll call it the rare example of exemption for a borrower. And when can we speak about a borrower being exempt? That's when the item that he borrowed either broke, became destroyed, or died, in the case of living creatures, during the course of the borrower's use of them. What if they died while in use? Then we call that meso machmas melacha, and the borrower is exempt. That having been said, I hope you take advantage, of course, of the markings and note how long the brackets are. You can see they extend third of the way down. Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph. Now the Gemara. Ibai Eloho. Maybe even before we begin the Gemara, we should look at our topic heading, the Nosei, that you see on the side, which reads Ha'im Shoyel Chayav B'Mikreshel Kichesh Bosor Habehemo Machmas Melacha Kichesh Besar Habehemo Machmas Melacha. Is a borrower considered Chayav? Is he obligated to compensate for weakness that set into the animal while being worked with? There's the topic of meso machmas, where it dies as a result of the work. The Gemara, Ibaya loho, kichesh bosor machmas melacha mai. An animal that becomes weakened as a result of its being worked with. What is the din? Amar le'ahum rabbanon, one of the rabbis, Rav Chilkiah braid Rav Avishman, his name happens to be Rav Chilkiah, in hearing this question, he reacts. Michlal dechi meso machmas melacha mechayev. If you're asking about weakness, is he chayev for that or not? You're implying that if it dies during work, the borrower is chayev for its death while having been worked with. Why should that be? That's not logical. Name ole, let the borrower in a case like that say to the owner, listen, I borrowed your animal to work with it. Lavlu ukma bekilsa shilta. I didn't borrow the animal to have it stored in a cage. Elo omar rafa. So we have to, we'll say, upgrade the issue or the understanding of things. Lo mi bayo kichesh boser machmas malocha de potter. It goes without saying that mere weakness that sets in as a result of having worked with the animal, the borrower is exempt. But even had the animal died as a result of the having worked with it, the borrower is exempt because of this logic. The Amarle, the borrower can say to the owner, Lav l'ukma b'kil s'shilt, I didn't borrow the animal for keeping it in a cage. I borrowed it to work with it. And that's part of the understanding that if it died while I was working with it, I can't be held responsible for that. We have a triangle, one of our series markings, and you can see on the side under the mivne, a hahu gavra, that is the term that's highlighted with the triangles. Sidra shel mikrim be'inyin meso machmoch, a series of incidents that have this as a common theme, something that ceases to function, ceases to exist because of the work done with it, with the borrowed item. Hahu gavra deshoyel narga, there was a man that borrowed a narga, an axe, me chavrei, from his friend Ispar, and it broke. Also lekamei de Rava. The case came to Rava as the borrower obligated to compensate. And how? Amarle zilai sisadi, you bring witnesses, the lav shonis beif iftar, that you did not shonis. Shonis means to use the item in an unusual fashion. In other words, bring witnesses that you didn't change from the appropriate use of the item and thereby gain exemption. V'i leko sadi, let us say the man can't bring witnesses. Toshma, so let's see from the following. Dahu gavro deshol narga mechavrei, someone that borrowed an axe from his friend. V'ispar, now Rashi adds, importantly, it broke, but through recklessness. I think we should assume that in the absence of witnesses, so then the borrower doesn't have the benefit of the assumption that he used it in a normal way. So that's why this response is appropriate. Since the borrower doesn't have that assumed assumption that he used it in a normal way, we're going to answer the question, how shall payment take place from a case like this where it broke through Pshia? Also lekame de Rav, the case came to Rav, Amalei zil shlim le narga me'alya. Rav said, well, you know, you borrowed an axe and it broke through recklessness. You must buy him a new, provide for him, buy for him a new axe, narga me'alya. New, me'alya means a positive axe. As opposed to, it, we'll see in a minute, as opposed to giving him back the broken axe, which has some value, and then paying the difference between a new axe and the pieces that you're giving him, that you're giving back to the owner. So Rav ruled, oh, you broke it, so you keep the pieces, but pay the owner a new axe. Omar le Rav Kahana v'Ravasi le Rav. So these two great rabbis that were Talmidim Chaverim of Rav, they were almost like his colleagues. They said, Dina Hochi, is that an accurate ruling that you pay back a new vessel in the case of Nezik, in the case of breakage? We know, and Rashi gives the background, that in the case of Nezik, in the case of breakage, damage caused, the guilty party pays the difference between the new one and the broken one. In other words, the offending party gives the broken pieces back to the owner, and we evaluate how much they are worth, the broken pieces. And the balance that remains between their value and the value of a new one, the offender pays the owner. Veshosik Rav, upon hearing their objection, he remained silent. Vehilchasok Rav Kana, Ravasi, Demahadirle, Tavre, Umemalio, Le, Deme, Mona. That, like they suggested, the tavre, the broken pieces, the broken pieces are returned to the owner, and the difference, the balance is paid to the owner instead of what Rav said, that a new item is given to the owner. Halu gavra deshoyel davlo mechavre. There was someone that borrowed a pail from his friend. His barn, it broke. Also, the kame the Rav Popo. The case came to Rav Popo. Amarle, Isi Sadi Lo Shonis Bei Iftar. Bring witnesses that you didn't use it in a reckless or an unusual fashion. You used it normally, and you will be exempt. Ha'u gavra deshoyel shunra mechavre. There was a person that borrowed a shunra. Shunra, many will translate that as a cat. What we can say about a shunra is that it is expected to be a nature's exterminator of mice. So he borrowed a cat for getting rid of his mouse affliction. He needed to get rid of the mice, so he borrowed someone's cat. You'll notice we have Roman numerals. There are two Lishonos here, and a few lines later, Iko Deami, a different version. So, version one, Chovor Ale Achbari V'katluhu. The mice ganged up, they gathered together, and they killed the cat. Yosef Rav Ashi V'komebaya Le Ki Haigav Nomai. How do we judge a case like this? Do we view that as it died in the course of its work, and that would be reason for exemption? Although, or maybe we don't look at it like that. Amarle Rav Mordechai the Ravashi. Rav Mordechai answers. Hachi Amar Avimi Mehagronia Mishmei de Rava. Thusly, it has been said by Avimi from Hagronia in the name of Rava Gavra. This is an expression. And we'll apply it to the case of the mice and the cat. Gavra, a male, denoshi katluhu, literally that women killed him. Rashi adds here, this man was involved with extensive sexual intimacy. Boal bilos harbe mace. As a result of that, he died. Lo dino velo dino. Now, that's an expression that we'll call it here. It wasn't expected. Just like a man engaged in that, it's not expected that he dies as a result. It wasn't expected that the cat would die at the hands of these mice. The Ritva explains that The borrower was not expected to take this into consideration, that the cat would die at the hands of the mice. And since he didn't behave recklessly, he is in fact exempt on the grounds of Mesa Machmas Malacha. Iko Diamri, another version. Ochil Achbari Tuva V'chavilumis. The cat was very effective. It ate a lot of mice. In fact, they ate too many mice, and chovio means it heated up and died. Yosef Ravashi v'kamayin bo kai gav nomai. Similar to the first version, Ravashi is asking, well, how do we view this? Omer le Rav Mordechai le Ravashi hachi omar avimi mehegronya. Same quote as we saw before. Noshi Gavra denoshi katlu, a man that was killed by women, lodina velodina. That expression, we're not offering a literal translation for lodina velodina. Suffice it to say, like we saw in the Ritva, that the borrower is exempt. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.